present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a sign spotted in Newport and read by Brian Perkins.
Toilets closed for refurbishment. Please use bus station.
Thank you, Maurice Ingham of Cheshire, for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. We welcome first, on my right, writer-performer, currently playing Hell, Andy Hamilton. And from the leafy depths of The Observer, Andrew Rawnsley. Facing them, on my left, every man's every woman, Joan Bakewell, and celebrating his 20th collection of comic pieces, Mrs. Corran's bit on the side, Alan Corran. Andy, you get the first question. You'll be surprised what it's about. Who is not operational as a matter of policy?
Well, I'd like to tell you about this dream that I had, actually, last night. It was terrifyingly realistic. I was running down this alleyway, and I was being pursued by this huge, shadowy figure, sort of monster. And I could feel its breath on my neck, and I could see the sort of profile of its claws against the night sky. And it was terribly, terribly frightening, because like one of those dreams is very, very real, you know, and you really believe you're there. And it was awfully scary. And then as I was running away from this awful monster, my heart was pounding. And then I turned a corner, and Michael Howard stepped out in front of me and said, "I resign." And I was so relieved, because then I knew it was a dream.
I can't improve on that.
I'm quite grateful to him, but we play this game in our house. You have to make up conditions under which he'd resign. I tried that he was found standing over the body of the murdered Queen Mother with a knife. But my wife said no, he wouldn't. You know, he would have said he was in charge of policy, but it was the knife that was responsible for the operational end of it. So it's quite a good game. Just try it at home, but it's very difficult. You can't win it.
Andrew, your question now. Which Jack was shuffled out of the pack?
Oh, this is Dr. Jack Cunningham, who has finally lost his seat on the Labour Shadow Cabinet. It's one of these odd things. I mean, he's had a seat there for 10 years or more, and just about every year, all we journalists have said, this year he's going to be off. And he's always got re-elected. This year, we left him alone. We got proved wrong so many times. We decided to leave him. We decided to predict somebody else for the chop. And sure enough, they've chucked him off now.
Right.
But he's getting rewarded
is
with something. He's getting his consolation prize as he will get to shadow Virginia Bottomley. They're a cruel lot in the Labour Party.
They are. Rotten thing to do. This was Tony Blair's reshuffle that saw Jack Cunningham voted out of the shadow cabinet. It includes the return of Tom Clark and Margaret Beckett. Tom was welcomed back with a warm handshake, and Margaret was given a lump of sugar, but I won't. Joan, why did one go to 10 for 8 million?
Oh, one did, didn't one? Yes, because one is a sailor. And one is a sailor with the interests of the Navy at heart, and not being at sea these days, being the Duke of Edinburgh and a trustee of the Maritime Museum. Maritime Museum had applied for lottery money and not got it, so it's unique in that, if not in anything else. And he went to number 10 and nudged John Major's elbow and said, shuffle the cards a different way. We need money for the Maritime Museum, which I think is quite right. It's an excellent institution. But it perhaps isn't the normal procedure for getting lottery money.
I thought it was in the hands of Knight Frank and Rutley, or whatever they call it.
It's Quango, Quango and Quango.
Oh, well, yes. Desirable residence and all that. This refers to Prince Philip, of course, who approached John Major for a share of lottery funds for the Greenwich Maritime Museum. With funds going to the opera and the ballet, fears were expressed that the regions are missing out. In fact, money is spread evenly all over the north and south of London. Alan, will you have a listen to this? You Win Again by the Bee Gees. Your question is, who won the mother of all elections?
Now, you see, Bakewell said that was Sting. And I
asked him.
And my head was full of this answer about Keith Moore, so I don't know where I am. Who won the mother of all elections?
Yes.
Who was the group singing? Is this a...
It was the Bee Gees.
It's the Bee Gees who regularly play in Iraq. That's right. Bee Gees from Baghdad.
That's right.
Yes, this was a wonderful election. There was an enormous swing to Saddam Hussein. from Saddam Hussein. I thought it was super. I Michael Howard can teach him nothing. Saddam Hussein managed by this fantastic, I mean, truly extraordinary election campaign going up and down the country on the hustings of shooting people. He managed to get 99.96% of the vote, which means that 0.04% of Iraq committed suicide last week. That's what you did if you put no on your ticket.
Apparently you got your food ration card stamped at the polling booth.
If you said no, kill this man if he walks into your grocery shop.
If you didn't get your ration card stamped, you didn't get food. So you got your card stamped at the polling booth and nowhere else. The Independent ran the headline, actually, Saddam Hussein fails to get 0.00%.
A claim that the result was a foregone conclusion was strenuously denied by Saddam's chief advisor, Ahmed Grobelaar. Saddam romped home with 99.96% majority, which is hardly surprising in an electoral system where a show of hands can be carried out by post. And the score... Well, even in Iraq, they'd applaud the scores at the end of the first round of the news quiz, because they are, as they always are, for all. We start round two with a report from the Dudley Express and Star.
Marksmen were called in and visitors locked inside buildings during a lion escape scare at Dudley Zoo. The manager, Peter Suddock, today said, "We have a team trained to shoot if a dangerous animal should escape. We don't allow our animals to eat people. It's bad for publicity."
Thank you, Joan and Brian Millington of the West Midlands, for sending us that. Andy, how was Sting stung?
Well, this was the story of Sting had an accountant who's now one of Her Majesty's accountants. And,
if he hasn't escaped, of course, under Michael Howard.
That's right. Oh, that wouldn't be his responsibility, though.
No, would be operated.
let's be fair to the man. This man sort of systematically embezzled money from Sting, a huge amount of money, several million, in fact, by putting it in 108 bank accounts, I think is what I read, which I think would be a bit fishy, coming back in beards and moustaches and opening new bank accounts. I don't know quite how he did it, but he's obviously very talented. And perhaps the most alarming aspect of the story is that Sting failed to notice for several years the absence of several million pounds from his bank account. And Sting's got his money back, though, although I'm not quite clear where he got it from.
It turned out it was in his other suit.
All right. Yeah, down the back of the sofa, probably.
All right, this refers to Sting, who was taken to the cleaners by his accountant. Bob Geldof would never have let himself be taken to the cleaners. Or the bathroom, kind of think of it. Anyway, court heard how Sting failed to notice the disappearance of £6 million from his bank account. He thought they'd just charged him for a couple of letters and a phone call. Andrew, what celebration will have you living happily ever after?
This is about long life, is it?
Well, no, it isn't. Well, it's about housing, curiously enough.
Housing?
Yeah.
I've no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, really?
Andy, is it new to you?
It's pretty new.
Is this Walt Disney?
It is Walt Disney, yes. Give him a bonus for that.
Walt Disney is building a utopia, or rather, he's dead. Not much of a utopia, maybe it'd be a place full of coffins. But I mean, Walt Disney Enterprises, probably with Tim Rice doing the music, is building a utopia, or they call it a utopia. If you want to live next door to a mouse, I suppose it's utopia. But it's a wonderful housing estate which is going to call up all the best of American situation. It's going to be like the noise of people shouting, "Honey, I'm home," will bring the tiles off the roof. But it's America in the 1940s, embodied in Walt's dream.
Where's it going to be?
Glasgow. I am not privy to Walt Disney's account, so I'm not like Keith Moore, the accountant, whose name we didn't hear, which is good for another point.
No, you've got a
bonus. I slide in quickly there, but yes, Walt Disney is
good. Alan, that's very... You're in big trouble now, because you used the word Disney 14 times in that answer without Disney's permission.
Without copyright.
They'll take it to the cleaners, they'll see you. for every penny. They're like the mafia.
Thank you for that. That's done us a lot of good, yeah. That is. Walt Disney's like the mafia. That's terrific news, that is. They're not going to sue us for libel for that, are they? Even if they are the mafia, I can't go on. This refers to the new Walt Disney housing estate called Celebration, where home buyers can live in a permanent American dream. It's built as a community of the late 20th century, but with the moral values of 19th century America. So there should be plenty of slaves about to mow the lawn. Some dwellings are based on the styles from Disney's most famous films, including a row of seven tiny little dwarf houses, especially commissioned from Barrett Homes. So we get writs from Barrett and Disney. But on a lighter note, he said, hoping to get a job in Radio 2. Joan, here's a piece of music. You're going to find me, ba, 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 out in the country. Ba, 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 ba. You're going to find me, ba, 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 out in the country. Ba, 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 ba. Well, pop pickers, that was Cliff Richard and In the Country. And Joan, your question is, whose paper tells a story of everyday subsidised folk?
This is an attempt to revive the countryside.
It is.
And it's being undertaken by the government because they've not been able to do anything about the towns. So they're turning to the country, which has managed to be there all along, but belonging to the wrong people. And they're taking steps in this white paper, John Selwyn Gummer published, to make it possible for people who were born in the country to go on living there and fight the weekenders who come in and put up the prices of property and things like that. So it's a white paper to revive the country and keep the heart of little villages living on forever, rather like Disney would have approved, and possibly even the mafia.
Mm. And they're going to revitalise it with building fine Barrett homes, apparently. That's how they're going to do it. Do you think we've repaired the damage now? I'm a man
I'd
of straw.
I'd buy a
Barrett
home any day of the week. These are new measures to hope will prevent industrial development in the countryside. John Gummer's white paper promised substantial extra funding for landowners in areas designated outstanding natural marginals. Alan, what might be over Les Blancs Cliffs of Dover?
This is the Radiant Queen Mother question.
Yes.
She has stepped in, or she's been asked to step in, quite rightly, as the warden of the Cinque Ports. She's done nothing for years. I've been to those Cinque Ports regularly, and there's no mark of the Queen. There's no radiance there at all. Not a gladiolus. Anyway, the French want Dover. They've tried it before, 900 years ago, and see where that got them. They only got Hastings. It was terrible. No boats, and a lot of cheap rock. But they now want Dover, and Dover's very upset about this because it doesn't really own by France. And it has invited the Queen Mother to step in. This is a wise move rather than going through the normal channels. I don't think she's actually responded to this yet. She smiled a bit, which has frightened the life out of the French. But they're still not backed off. But at the time of going to microphone, Dover is still ours.
We mustn't miss the political spin on this. Why the French may get their garlic-stained hands on Dover is because our government is planning to privatise the thing. They can have
I didn't want to say that.
In, well, I'm sorry,
Mr.
Alan,
Porter
but I think...
Mr. Porter is very upset about this.
Yes, yes.
He's caught in a right-wing trap here. He wants to privatise Dover, but he doesn't want the bloody frogs to have it.
But the point is, surely, if Calais can bid for Dover, can Paris bid for London? Can Lyon bid for Glasgow? You know,
yes.
This is called going into Europe.
The state of the public finances, the Queen Mum can see who's going to be next.
Right. If Auntie bids for Cricklewood, I shall not stand in its way.
Can could have Oldham.
Of course, this is the plan by the French to buy the port of Dover to gain control of the car ferries. Now, do the French seriously believe this government would sell off sovereignty of an ancient port for 150 million? Too right. For another 50 quid, they'll throw in Margate. And the scores. The scores have changed dramatically at the end of the second round because Andy and Andrew have 6, but Alan and Joan have leapt into the lead with 9. We start round 3 with an item seen in classical guitar.
Jonathan Jackson's Quatre Fugues, which were premiered by Vladislav Blaha in Ostrava, have now been published by Bourbon. Mr. Jackson is pleased with the response to the work which he's received so far. Wonderful, said Benjamin Verdery. Lovely, said Gilbert Berbarian. And the composer's mother said, tuneless garbage.
Well, thank you, Hector Quine of London, for that. Andy, whose birthday record was celebrated with Guinness?
Well, there were two extraordinary birthdays this week. One was a French woman who's lived to the ripe old age of 120. The other was Mrs. Thatcher, who just feels like she's lived to 120. She's a very, very elderly person, and they went round and asked her the secret of long life. She said, a sense of humour. Which is what everybody always says whenever they've lived a long time. It's rather harsh, because it means all the people who died young were humourless gits, which I think is a bit of a sweeping sort of statistical generalisation.
Do you think Mrs. Thatcher...
Mrs. Thatcher may bear out, or Baroness Thatcher, as we have to call her now, may bear out that other bit of medical research which was published this week, which says that if you're nice and sweet, you die young. But if you're a cantankerous old git who gets up everybody's noses, then you're probably going to get a very long life.
Well, she'll never die, will she? I mean, that's the problem. It'll be like she, you know.
This refers to Madame Jean Calment, who at 120 years and 238 days, or a little more if you're listening to the repeat, went into the Guinness Book of Records as the world's oldest person. Sadly, she and her husband argued constantly before divorcing last year. They thought it best to wait for the kids to die. She gave up smoking when she was 110. It's as well to kick the habit before it does you any permanent damage. Andrew, here's a piece of music for you. Unsurprising, that was called Eat It, and it was by Weird Al Yankovic. And your question is, who chewed the fat over a Big Macca?
Quite slim. There's so many food stories in the news this week. Yeah. Of course, you're right, it's Linda McCartney, isn't it? Whose super healthy veggie sausages, which we've been serving to my daughters recently, turn out to be not so super healthy after all, and rather too high a fat content to Linda's great... alarm and surprise, and so they've been withdrawn for retesting. I think we're going to have a look and see if they can make them a little healthier.
Did your daughters like them?
Yes, they did, actually. I mean, not here to do a free advert, mind you, on behalf of the McCartneys, who if Sting didn't notice 6 million go missing, well, then 60 million, I would have thought, in their case. But yes, they did actually enjoy them until we discovered what was actually inside them. Yes.
Ah. We found they couldn't get the children through the door without a tire lever.
This is all about Linda McCartney's veggie burgers, which are found to contain twice the fat content on the box and about half the flavour of the box. It is alleged. This was discovered when the totally meat-free, extra fatty burgers started to taste strangely like the real thing. But husband Paul still likes Linda's cooking. Mind you, he quite likes her singing. I think they're both awfully nice. Joan, your turn again. Why was there much ado about the face behind the mask?
Is this the bard himself?
It is the bard.
And this is a very curious story.
It is.
Why have the Germans got their hands on the death mask of William Shakespeare?
They've got government privatised. In the morning.
Well,
I mean, threw a tea towel over it. It's a bust of Shakespeare's. They kick your towel. Also. They get everything in the end. The extraordinary thing about it is he had Nigel Mansell's moustache.
He's
a racing driver. It's very odd. I mean, it isn't a 16th century face, is it? When you look at
it's not a face.
It's a German who died last week. And they stuck his face in some plaster of Paris and they want money for it.
They paid a lot of money for it.
I think Portillo is absolutely right. They'll do Byron next. They'll have Byron's club foot in a cigar box. That'll cost them money.
They could put in a bid for Stratford-on-Avon.
Yes. You could twin it with Nuremberg. I know.
Absolutely right. It's all about the death mask, which it's claimed in Germany is the true image of William Shakespeare. Experts say the miserable face with the big nose and droopy moustache is definitely that of the mainstay of ancient comedies. So it's either Shakespeare or Blakey from On the Buses. Alan, why should viewers be prepared for a camp shock?
Well, I mean, this is more dismantling of empire, isn't it? I mean, he relieved Mafeking. Not easy if you're a single man. But anyway, Baden-Powell, there is going to be another debunking story that's going to suggest that Baden-Powell, who liked walking around in shorts with a big stick and talking to small boys, was odd. It's a filthy rumour that's been perpetrated by the lefties at Television Centre, and they've made a film
Channel
saying...
Channel 4, actually.
Channel 4, the left, even lefter. Well, why doesn't Channel 4 like him? I mean, Channel 4 is all about programmes with blokes in funny hats and short trousers who like taking small boys for walks in the woods. It's what Channel 4 is there for. Anyway, the aspersions are being cast on the Great Woggle. He came home from Mafeking to do things for small boys.
That's quite
and
right.
And 90 years later, we go over his room. I think it's no wonder nobody joins the Scouts anymore. There was a thing this week that women don't want to lead brownies. That was equally sad.
Yes.
I love seeing brownies on the street. They're doing a documentary about me on Channel 4 now.
Old Baden-Curran. Scores at the end of round 3. Andy and Andrew are a graceful 10, but Alan and Joan are even more graceful with 13. Before we start final round, here's a cutting sent in by Steve O'Loughlin of Huddersfield.
I feel quite sorry for the burglar, said Rod McGregor, one of the owners of the company. You can plan for every eventuality, but the last thing you expect is anyone trying to attack an explosives factory with a blowtorch.
Well, thank you, Steve O'Loughlin, a regular contributor. Andy, here's a piece of music for you.
So we were doing 90, must have left him in the dust. When I peeked in the mirror of my car, I couldn't believe my eyes. The little Nash rapper was right behind. I think that guy could fly. Beep, 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 beep. Here's one, beep, beep, beep.
Well, who gave the wrong signal to overtake a princess?
This is a woman who did what we would all like to do, I suspect. She cut up a royal motorcade.
That's right.
Rather oddly, she thought it was probably the mayor who was getting in her way, so therefore she thought it was all right to... So she sort of roared up on the outside, and then I think they thought that Princess Alexandra was under terrorist attack from this 45-year-old woman in a Ford Fiesta, and whatever it was. And so I think some hot pursuit began, and she gave them the finger...
That's right.
The royal finger.
The royal finger. And then they whizzed past some very nice Barrett homes, very well constructed Barrett homes. Beautifully decorated by Disney. And, in the end, I think a policeman threw himself across the bonnet of her car.
That's right.
At which point, I think she realised that something was wrong. Anyway, she's been banned from driving, I believe.
This was Rita Brown, that's the lady's name, who came upon a royal convoy on the M6 and went into road rage, then drove up the inside lane by Princess Alexandra's car, swearing and making V signs. The princess simply waved back. She naturally assumed it was the Duke of Edinburgh. As you so rightly say, Andy, Mrs. Brown was finally stopped when a policeman dived across her windscreen at a set of traffic lights. She gave him a quid and asked him to wipe the tailgate as well. Joan, what cereal scientists have answered the crunch question?
Is it a cornflake question?
It is.
I don't know the answer.
Your friend will help you out.
It's the Department of Gamma. They've spent a couple of £100,000 of our money at the Institute of Food. Wondering why cornflakes go soggy when you pour milk on them.
Because you pour milk on them.
That's exactly why. But it takes... You can do that. How much do you charge for statements like that? But anyway, it costs $100,000. I exaggerate.
$200,000.
Is it?
Well, it's $200,000. And they won this daft award, didn't they? This
I want to know why the Ninja Turtle gets stuck in your throat. Why do they not have them larger than the spoon? I've eaten so many free gifts out of them. It's an Aladdin's cave down there. I think they're going to open it down there. Find all these things, little sheds and stuff.
Right.
I've got a dinky from about 1960.
These are the British scientists who have just spent 3 years finding out what makes cornflakes soggy. The answer is published in their extensive one-word report, milk. Justifying the project, the scientists claimed their £250,000 grant was difficult to get, as they had to send off 6 cereal packet tops and a first-class stamp. Alan, you did so well there. Here's your proper question. Who went on the couch to learn the bear necessities?
This is about a polar bear
right.
in New York.
Yes.
And there was no one there for him. And he got extremely glum, so this being New York, they called in a psychotherapist. Right. I think the real problem was the polar bear kept falling off his glacier mint. And this spelt the end of his career. It depressed him enormously. But it's a serious story. It's a polar bear, enormously depressed. Most of us would be depressed to be in New York, but anyway, stuck there in the Bronx Zoo or New York Zoo. Oh. And they gave him an analyst, and they've sorted him out. He's now a happy little polar bear.
Right.
Married to Woody Allen, I believe.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Teams? Have you bought cuttings for us? Andy, have you got a cutting?
Yes, I do have a cutting. It's sent in by Neil Larking from Worcester College, Oxford. It's from a magazine called Reason. University of Idaho student Jason Wilkins thought it would be fun to moon a group of his friends. He tried to climb onto a 3-foot-high heater in front of a window on the dorm's third floor, but he slipped and fell off the heater and through the window, breaking several bones and cutting himself. He's now filed a claim for $940,000, charging the university with negligence for failing to properly supervise his behaviour and for not warning him of the dangers of falling through a third floor window.
Thank you. Andrew?
This is also on an educational theme, Barry. It's a Times feature about great public school headmasters. One of the great Victorian pedagogues, Dr. Vaughan, became headmaster of Harrow in 1844, aged only 28. He lasted until he was 43, when he resigned suddenly after a scandal concerning a boy he loved not wisely, but too well. He was immediately offered a bishopric.
Joan.
This is an item in this morning's papers. Although Mr. Cummings was happy with the report councillors were to consider, a deferment should be granted to cross the I's and dot the T's.
Alan.
I have a moving story from the Barnsley Chronicle, Barry.
Oh.
It says, police arrived quickly to find Mr. Melchett hanging by his fingertips from the back wall. He had run out of the house when the owner, Paul Finch, returned home unexpectedly, and spotting an intruder in the garden, dialed 999. What Mr. Finch did not know was that Mr. Melchett had been visiting Mrs. Finch, and hearing the front door open, had climbed out of a rear window. But the back wall was 8 feet high, and Mr. Melchett had been unable to get his leg over.
Thank you all. But the final score is quite interesting, because Andy and Andrew have narrowed the gap with Alan and Joan, but not quite enough, because they got 14, but Alan and Joan got 16, this week's winners. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Mirror.
A poisonous tarantula, which was brought in to help Good Morning presenter Anne Diamond overcome her phobia, escaped on air yesterday. An insider at Pebble Mill said, Anne had only just got over her fear of spiders, so the last thing we wanted her to know on live TV that one of them was running around. To make matters worse, Prince Edward was dead.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Andrew Rawnsley and Joan Bakewell. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Alad Evans.